Hello and welcome to Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Today we're going to learn about word studies in our series called How to Study the Bible. Now before we get to that, I want to remind you about our national conference, which is coming up on October 26th and will run through the 29th. It's going to be in Coppell, Texas at Coppell Bible Fellowship. We certainly hope to see you there. Well, let's jump right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Well, welcome back to the show. We've been studying how to study the Bible. We've been discussing that question. Not everyone, right. You're not really told how to do that in church typically. There's just not enough time. If you go to church like once a week for like an hour and a half.
No, however, one thing you can do is as you're hearing someone teach in Sunday school or you're hearing the preacher preach in the worship service, listen carefully and try to figure out how they got what they're saying.
Right.
And over time, you can catch the method they're using, and you can get a bit of the art of what they're doing. And so if you're in the right kind of a church where it's accurately teaching the Bible, you will learn more and more how to interpret the Bible.
And by the way, when preaching is kind of like sensible and it's actually following proper rules of interpretation, it's not always as exciting as these fanciful allegorical preaching, you know?
Right.
This prodigal exegesis, you called it in the last episode. You can make a really... Have you ever heard a preacher say, well, that'll preach?
Yeah.
Now, what'll preach is not necessarily what the text is saying, though. You know,
well,
you can make up a whole long story about, I used the example yesterday about Jesus being born in a manger. I heard a preacher once say, what this means is everyone needs to have Jesus born in their hearts. Now, that's not what Jesus being born in the manger means, but
right.
That's what he said it meant. And he had a big long sermon about how we need to have Jesus born in our hearts. In a sense, that's true. We all need to be born again, but that's not what the text is about.
Right.
So watch out when you hear these preachers. And I think if you learn to be a good Bible student, you'll be able to discern which preachers are good Bible students.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
No,
right?
That's a good point.
Well, today, Bob, I wanted to talk about one key or one method of studying the Bible, and that is by doing word studies.
Okay, now this is very, very dear to my heart.
Yeah.
I had been on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ in college ministry for 4 years. I had been speaking regularly in college life meetings, occasionally in church services. I had been teaching Bible studies, and I really didn't know what I was doing. I got to Dallas Seminary, and one of the things I learned very quickly was to do word studies. I found this was one of the most fruitful methods of interpreting the scriptures. What I found was as you study a word and its usage by the same author, especially in the same book,
right.
It opens up the meaning of that word and oftentimes the whole book.
Right.
For example, I remember I wrote a paper on 1 Corinthians 9. 24 to 27 in the Greek department. It was one of my first exegetical papers, we called them. 1 Corinthians 9, 27, maybe you could read that, 24 to 27.
Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified.
Okay, now there are a number of words here that I found helpful to study. The most important one is the word translated disqualified. And this would be an example where you talked in an earlier episode about people looking up English words. It would do you no good to look up the English word disqualified because that's not what this word means.
Right.
This is a Greek word, adokimos, and it occurs a very small number of times. If I remember right, I think it's 7. Dokimos means approved. Adokimos means not approved or disapproved. When you study both the words dokimos and adokimos in Paul, and then more broadly the entire New Testament, you find out that it's referring to approved or disapproved.
All right, so let's say, for example, someone comes across this passage, just a normal person, and they're reading this passage, and they come across this word disqualified.
Or how about if you're in the King James, it translates it as Castaway.
Castaway.
A castaway.
Let's say you have a question about that word. What's the first thing that you do?
Well, the first thing you should do is get your interlinear out and see what the Greek word is.
Right.
And see what the meaning of that Greek word is.
And by the way, the tool that I use to do that is BibleHub.com.
And is that a free thing?
It's free. BibleHub, H-U-B.com. And they have an interlinear there. You can click on any word you want to know the Greek or Hebrew of, and then it'll show you the Greek or Hebrew. It transliterates it, and then you can click, and it'll give you the definition.
Well, so on this one, for example, I would connect this verse with, like, 2 Timothy 2:15. Be diligent, or be eager, or study to show yourself an approved workman
right.
who need not be ashamed.
Right.
Approved is dokimos. This is has the letter A in front of it, or alpha, and the alpha privative changes the meaning to the opposite. Just like in English,
right.
the opposite of typical is atypical.
Sure.
Well, in Greek, the opposite of dokimos is adokimos. One who is disapproved is one who is not approved. But 2 Timothy 2:15, we want to be approved, not ashamed.
Right.
Well, you can then do a study of ashamed, and you'll come to 1 John 2:28. Let's abide in him so that we are not ashamed before him at his coming.
Well, do you think there's any value? Now, not everyone's going to go to an interlinear as their first step. Do you think there's any value in just looking up the word in a concordance?
Sure. You could look it up, for example, in Strong's or Young's Exhaustive Concordance, and they will give you some connections with the Greek, if it's a Greek word, or Hebrew, if it's a Hebrew word.
Often your reference Bible will have references to other verses that are similar to the ones that you're studying. It won't be as specific down to the word, but it might give you a kind of like a start somewhere.
Right. When you're looking at this, you might want to do a word study on running. Paul talks a lot about running in his various epistles, and he talks right. about running in vain. You might want to do a study, for example, on the word Stephanos, crown. And you could study the word crown and how it's used elsewhere in Paul or the New Testament.
And by the way, so let's say you're reading this, and we were talking about how we believe in the grammatical historical method. Now, if you weren't using that method, I bet someone could read, let's say, verse 25 and wonder, why is Paul talking about getting a new tooth, an imperishable crown, right?
Yeah. And I wish I could have an imperishable tooth because right? I have to have my crowns replaced about every 5 or 10 years.
Oh, man. But if you go to what the word meant, trying to examine what it meant to the person who wrote it at the time that they wrote it, you're going to get all kinds of interesting things out of this passage because Paul was probably thinking about some local Greek sporting events. The Isthmian Games?
The Isthmian Games was held outside of Corinth every 3 years, unlike
right.
our Olympic Games that are every 4. This was every 3 years.
Right. And then that's going to tell you about what these crowns are and why,
right.
why is what's imperishable, what's perishable. And
that's another thing. You could do a word study on perishable and imperishable.
And I'll give you an example of another example of where word studies are just so helpful. You have a book called The 10 Most Misunderstood Words. I have a book called Chosen to Serve. And they're both of those books are basically outgrowths of word studies.
Okay.
What we discovered was the way people use these theological words today, I'm thinking especially in your book of salvation. In
right.
my book, it's election.
Right.
For example, when you hear the word salvation, don't you automatically think salvation from hell? I hope not, but
you shouldn't
but they
do
probably
that,
should.
Because most of the time, that's not what it's talking
well,
about.
Well, that's what you discovered. So you did a word study on salvation in the Bible and how it's used. And instead of it being 99% of the time reference to salvation from hell, you actually found quite the opposite. It was something like 80%,
yes.
80% of the time salvation from dangers in this life.
Right. In the Old Testament, 100%. In the New Testament, about 70% of the time. And let me give you a few examples of where word studies on the words save, the Greek word sozo, or salvation, the Greek word soteria, really helps. For example, if you study it in Romans, what you find is every use of salvation in Romans refers to deliverance from God's wrath in this life. And it's not being born again.
Right.
When Paul wants to talk about that in Romans, he talks about justification and being declared righteous. But it means to be saved from the wrath of God, and it opens up the book of Romans. Another example, salvation in Hebrews.
Right.
We come to Hebrews 1:14, and it's talking about salvation. It's mentioned a number of times.
Yeah.
It's always referring to being Christ's partners or his metakoi, and that's another good word study,
right,
in the life to come. When the author of Hebrews wants to talk about salvation from eternal condemnation,
yeah,
he uses the term sanctified. We've been sanctified forever, Hebrews 10:10 and 10:14. You find that in Philippians, for example. Paul says, I know this will work out for my salvation, Philippians 1:19. What he means is, through their prayers and the work of the Spirit, he will handle his imprisonment in a way that glorifies God.
Right.
And when he says in 2:12, work out your own salvation in fear and trembling, he's saying, work out your own successful handling of your own trials, your own persecution,
right,
to the glory of God.
What I'm hearing you saying is, when you do a word study and you see that a word can be used in many different ways, you become a little bit more of a nuanced reader of Scripture, because now every time you're going to come across the word salvation, instead of just automatically assuming that whatever the case may be, he's talking about salvation from hell. Like, think about when Peter was walking on water and he started to doubt and he started to sink.
Lord,
and he said, Lord, save me. If you think that salvation always means salvation from hell, you're going to think, okay, Peter was worried about going to hell.
Now,
at
Peter
that
probably had his hand up. So his raised hand should show this was salvific. Right.
Right.
Well, but it was saving, but not in the sense of from hell, but this was
saving from drowning. So once you realize, oh, you do these word studies and realize, wow, words have different meanings
depending on the context.
Right.
Yeah.
Depending on the context. Now you're going to be a little more careful as a Bible student. You're not going to jump to conclusions. You're going to say, okay, what's the context here? And that's part of becoming a better Bible student.
Right. And if you read your book, Chosen to Serve, or my book, 10 Most Misunderstood Words, you may not agree with everything you read, but you're going to see the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
And this will help you in the future on words that aren't mentioned in these books.
Right. This is part of what's called inductive Bible study. You develop your doctrine after surveying all the evidence and realizing there's all kinds of nuances here and there. Now you get your doctrine out of that study instead of imposing your doctrine on the text ready-made. Well, I hope this has been helpful, and we're going to keep on studying this question of how to be a good Bible student. I hope you keep on listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax-deductible and very much appreciated, because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about observation, asking questions of the text. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.